welcome to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith. We are still waiting for Sebastian Plante's return. He was held up in Schiphol Airport, and we are hoping that he will be back in time for next week's show. Now, before we dive into various other topics, later today we have a large interview with the incredibly talented team behind A Happy Man. This is a documentary that is premiering T-minus 2 hours or so here at the Hot Docs Film Festival. We will be keeping an eye on the reaction to that as well. We interview the subject of the documentary, Marvin, but also we are joined by Sonia, the highly talented filmmaker that made it all possible. More information on that and more details as we move later into the show. But for now, I wanted to kick it off by first talking about an open letter that Egal Canada has sent out to every municipality in Canada. This letter, sent to all municipalities, asks the municipalities to fly the pride flags as a symbol of solidarity with 2S LGBTQI people. Really, they're pointing to how this is a powerful symbol, but also this is a time when people in the communities, sadly, still need to know that these are places that are accepting. They note in their open letter, I'm quoting here, between 2019 and 2021, there was a 64% rise in police-reported hate crimes against the LGBTQI community in Canada. The majority of them, 77%, targeted the gay and lesbian community, and 13% of hate crimes were directed at their sexual orientation. Egal Canada's Still in Every Class School, Still in Every Class in Every School report found that 64% of students, 64% of students continue to hear homophobic or transphobic comments daily or weekly at school. In every corner of this country, we are seeing a growing trend in anti-LGBTQI hate. By flying the pride flag, municipal governments can show their commitment to equity, inclusion, and justice for all members of their community. Flying the flag is so much more than a symbolic gesture. The letter from Egal Canada goes on from there, but it seems to be making the case that municipalities the country over have a role to play in demonstrating that taxpayers, community members in each and every one of these communities are welcome. Now, as somebody who had a less than welcome reception were the participants in the York Regional District, York Regional Catholic District School Board. These school board titles are really, you know, tongue twisters here. Let me see if I can find a pretty telling short clip. This is from some of the protesters who interrupted the proceedings at the York Catholic District School Board. So this is now the third time in 3 months, that's 3 consecutive board meetings, as Paolo Di Buono pointed out on his Twitter account, that this sort of vitriolic hate has come in and interrupted proceedings at the York Catholic District School Boards. This is actually the third time, I believe, that police have been called in to respond to this. It is quite shocking. There have been reports from LGBT youth on site who felt that they were effectively being bullied by people yelling at them in the hallway, yelling at them from the gallery in the proceedings. At the very least, it seems like decorum, you know, there's civil conversation seems to have been running away here. So what is at issue? The York Catholic District School Board was having a meeting as to respond to request by, I think, LGBTQ plus students in the Catholic School Board to raise the pride flag at the school board. Now, this is not a shock. We've reported on multiple school boards, the public school system, I believe, broadly speaking, across most of Canada, does raise the pride flag as part of their school proceedings. And there are a number of of Catholic school boards in, I believe, the province of Ontario and elsewhere in the country that also fly the Pride flag during Pride Month, which is typically recognized in June. So this is not an unreasonable, it is not an uncommon, it is not a surprising request that the students in the York District School Board are asking the school board themselves to be able to step up and fly the flag. Members of the community, what have been loosely referred to as stakeholders, they have yelled things such as calling the devil incarnate, yelling shame and interrupting the proceedings. They definitely feel that having a flag or some stickers is frankly unacceptable, and interrupted the proceedings to make that point heard. It's worth noting that how the community, how the Catholic school boards and others are addressing this is quite a cause of concern. Even in the Catholic Church itself, there is no unanimous decision as to how the teachings apply to this. The Pope himself has been very forgiving of the LGBT community, very much speaking to the need to welcome and bring into the circle LGBT folks. I believe earlier in the year we reported on bishops in the Catholic bishops in Germany out there blessing same-sex marriages and or same-sex unions at least. And earlier this month at Trans Day of Visibility, 6,000 nuns signed an open letter in support of trans and non-binary community members. Now the nuns, when they've all gathered up to say something, people pay attention. So it is not unanimous in the Catholic community. It is certainly not unanimous in the York Region Catholic community. But it is unfortunate that some folks are so riled up, so pent up with anger and hate, that they are interrupting proceedings of school boards to stop a flag from being raised. Now, we will be back with more news at the end of the show, but until then, our first song of today is by Wake Island. It's symbols. It's very hard to describe this article. It's like the heart emoji, the J, and then the other heart emoji. It's worth checking out. But this is by Wake Island. You can find them online, and you will certainly recognize this song as soon as you see it. It is a collection of symbols. A bit hard to tell you over the radio, but check out Wake Island. We will be back. And just after this, we'll be returning with the interview for Hello and welcome back to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is still Luke Smith. Sebastian, although in today's show, he is currently still in the Netherlands as we record this interview. My understanding is that he is picking up the last of his cheese before he makes his way back to Canada tomorrow. I am beyond thrilled to be joined by the two fantastic individuals on the call with me today, Marvin Horvat and Sonia. Thank you so much for joining. I've not long, like the last 5-10 minutes ago, finished A Handsome Man, a documentary that's coming out at the Art Talks Film Festival in about, by my imaginary watch, about an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours away. So it's 6:45 p.m. at Hot Docs, and folks can also catch it on Sunday if you do need more than 2 hours notice to go and see a documentary. So thank you so much, both of you, for joining me today to talk about this truly powerful and human documentary. I think that's what really sort of bleeds through to me. Would you want to quickly introduce A Handsome Man, and for our listeners who have no idea what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I really want to, because it's called A Happy Man.
Oh, fucking Moses. No,
that's completely...
I'm so flattered. Keep calling it A Handsome Man. I love it.
I've been looking at it all day. In front of me. Ah, oh, jeez.
So just for listeners to know, it's really called A Happy Man, but let's call it A Handsome Man.
It was a Freudian slip, I think. That's what it was. Just a Freudian slip. The documentary A Happy Man is coming out at Hot Docs later today. And obviously you can get a hold of it in the festival as well. And then, as I mentioned earlier, on Sunday. Do you want to just quickly let folks know what A Happy Man is about?
So, hello everyone. I'm Sonia. I'm the director of this movie. Called A Happy Man. It's a documentary about a transgender man and his family and his story of transition. But ultimately, it is not that much about like medical side of the story or legal side of the story. It is much more focused on Marvin, his everyday life, his family, his relationship to his husband, Ivan, and how the things will work for them in this period of time. And now I will pass mic to my handsome friend Marvin.
This is gonna stick. I love it. it follows my transition. Basically, we started started filming when I was quite early in the transition. I was out to my friends, my colleagues, my family, but I haven't yet started to do any physical changes or on any legal process was still on hold. So, and I was basically waiting in queues for getting medical attention and stuff. So And then we were filming in like short periods of time over 3.5 years. Sonia, correct me if I'm wrong. And finished last year. Yeah.
I think it's hard to explain that it's definitely a story of the transition of a trans man, but it doesn't really speak to the politics that is happening, explosively across Eastern Europe at the moment. And not just Eastern Europe, we're seeing an anti-trans backlash out of the West and sort of the vitriol, globally. And maybe we'll get into that in just a few moments. But what I think has been beautifully captured, and I think maybe Sonia, you can speak to this, is the humanity in the story. Trans folks are so often dehumanized, spoken about in the abstract, as I'm doing right now, and just really sort of objectified and medicalized. But this is such a human story that I found myself frequently throughout it thinking about my own relationship with my partner and my own relationship with my mother. And obviously I can't compare lived experiences, but I think it spoke to more universal challenges in a beautiful way. How much was that in your decision of how to create and how to tell the story?
Yeah, this was very deliberate, actually. And from the very beginning, I knew that I want to depoliticize the issue, or I wouldn't even call it an issue. I would call it a story or situation in life. And the idea was that, of course, I would love people who are from community to relate to the story. And I know that I probably won't be able to touch people who are completely opposed or on the other side of the spectrum. But I would like to interest people who are maybe unfamiliar with transgender people and issues and challenges and obstacles they have to overcome. And so they can empathize and somehow relate to this story. And me as a cisgender person who lives in a heterosexual long-term relationship, but it was something which was, I tried to connect to Marvin's experience on purely, I would say, human level and understand it. It's basically as simple as that, you know? And I think this is actually the way how we should talk about transgender rights, human rights, to relate to people and try to understand what is the everyday life like, basically.
What about yourself, Marvin? When a lot of things jump out at me in terms of how delicately your relationship with your husband was portrayed, how carefully your relationship with your kids and family were portrayed. When you were in the midst of this with a camera sort of following you around, how did that impact your life? And what was it like being on the other side of that?
I think for me, the most important prerequisite to doing it at all was that Sonia and I are long-term friends. We knew each other long before we started doing this. And it was basically just a coincidence. Sonia was one of the first people I came out to because I knew that she would be understanding and accepting. And I also shared a lot of my frustrations. I think it happens to a lot of queer folks. When you come out and you start looking around yourself and you realize what situation you're in and you start to relate to other queer people in the community, what situation they are in, and there is this need to do something about it, and it's so powerful, and it's also a great outlet for the stress you're in, right? And I think a lot of people turn to activism. I did that for a while as well. And I think if I didn't have kids and I didn't have such a busy life, I would still continue with activism quite a lot. During this time, I was like sharing all these frustrations with Sonia and telling her like, it's impossible to do anything about it. What can I do about it? And then she called me a few days later, like, well, could we like do an interview? Would you be up for that? And then it kind of snowballed into the whole project that is now, you know, that's been bought by HBO, and we're going to stream it on HBO Max starting the autumn. And I think that because it was my friend that I trusted completely, I was able to be open. And she then did the humongous work to edit those 3 years into an hour and a half and do it with respect to my privacy, with respect to my family. And yeah, I'm very grateful to Sonia for being able to capture it in such a way.
I think it was about taking control in a way, because a transgender person is very, it felt like Marvin had to justify himself and his feelings to officials, to many gatekeepers who are necessary part of this whole process. So bizarrely so, even though I was in control in a way as a person who was telling and creating and reflecting your story, in a way it was about taking back the power to speak your mind and telling who you are to the world and telling that you basically can control your story and can control the way it unwraps.
I think what jumps out at me, and I hope that folks go and either see this at the Hot Docs Film Festival or Bell-owned Crave is the distributor for HBO here in Canada. So anyone who has Crave or Bell will hopefully be able to catch it later on. But I was talking to a younger friend of mine, and we were talking about queer movies, and it was heartbreaking to be like, yeah, for a long time, all the good gay movies, people died. Like, it was, it's depressing. Like, there is no happy ending for gay people for a long time. And, you know, queer cinema reflected trauma and darkness. And, you know, it's hard to choose that. And I was concerned that maybe this would be a similarly depressing ride. And it wasn't. It was very thought-provoking. I think one of the things that you kind of get to is, what does it mean fundamentally to be happy? And what are your relationships with each other fundamentally based upon? And Marvin, your relationship with your husband, Ivan, I think was, I mean, he's a keeper, you know, and it's just like that very much came through and sort of bled through, and it's awkward because obviously the documentary is such a personal story that it almost feels invasive to ask questions about it. But how are things now? I suppose is maybe where I'll end that monologue.
Yeah, that's the beauty of it. They're pretty much the same. I mean, you know, if you ask anybody who has kids at that age, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, whatever, it's just kind of, in Sweden, we call it the wheel for the squirrel, you know, the hamster. You have the hamster wheel, right? It mm-hmm. like, you like kind of continue, you know. And I think we're very much at that stage. But I think we're very content. It just works. Yeah.
I will add that one of the things that I wrote down, which I thought was hilarious, was Ivan was talking about how, so my, you correct me if I'm wrong, but Ivan is a cisgendered heterosexual man who is your husband.
Yeah.
I'm seeing
that's how he identifies anyway.
Yeah. So. But I bring it up because he was talking about how he's perceived by others. And he said, it's as important to me as if I was perceived as Italian. And I just thought that was, as someone from Europe, I'm like, yes, that is, you know, in terms of the consequence and impact. What you've balanced so well in this documentary is the nuances in how that transition has impacted your own life, but also that interplay with friends and family, particularly family, and how that kind of all came together. To go from all those interviews and compile that into an hour and a half and still capture the breadth of nuance that you have, I mean, that sounds like it was, a significant task.
Yeah, thank you very much for acknowledging that. It really was. It took us like 6 months or 7 months, or it was like ridiculously long. We were editing it and we had like eight versions, I think. But we were slowly getting there, like no major changes, just like little tweaks here and there. Yeah, it was. But do you know what? Not such a long time ago, I read the very first synopsis of the film, which is like small, short blurb you write in the very beginning of the process. So it was like 5 years ago. And what struck me was that it actually fits the result, like we could have used it basically as a blurb for the made film. So I think that actually, since the very beginning, I had a very clear vision where I want to go with this film. And it probably also connects to the fact that I'm an anthropologist. So this somehow probably influences my perspective on things and the way that I focused on everyday life and relationships and like little subtle changes in the dynamic, like relationships dynamics and so on. But yeah, I knew where I want to go and what are like topics and things I want to address and where I don't want to go. So for example, I was very particular how to work with the topic of sexuality and intimacy, as I think that in transgender stories, people always tend to be interested in like sexuality and this part of relationship and life, but people who live together for 20 years, have very complex relationship, and of course sexuality and intimacy is part of it, but there is so much more to it, and I don't like it to be reducted basically to this. And it's in a way extravaganza, that you want to, like, it's not the way to go, I think. So
I think you've hit on something there. There is a perception that trans bodies are public property in the trans debate that happens. Especially being as close as we are to the States, the rhetoric around, investigating children's genitals for school washrooms, for example, is an extreme, but it is very much something that has come up. And just that perverse intrusion onto somebody's life. I liked how you handled it in the film, where I think you were talking about the books that you've written, Marvin, and you asked the question, and I think you say, "I'm not talking about my sexuality." It was a funny line, and it moved on. And I think that I had a lot of respect for that because I think it reiterated that personal and that private. And I think that drawing that line again for the trans experience in terms of like, yeah, there are some things that are certainly public discourse, but there are a lot of things that really ought not to be.
that's why I actually kept my question there in that particular scene.
Fantastic.
And I use this every time I asked something inappropriate, I kept it there, so that people who are watching it know that it's them reacting to my not so appropriate.